Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning. Happy New Year. My name's Philip. I am a practitioner here at CSL Bellingham. My pronouns are he and him, and my ancestors hail from California, Texas, Mexico, and Spain. So please join me. Oh, there are plenty of ways that we can provide prayer for you all. You can do so using our prayer vessel at the back of the sanctuary, and any practitioner that you see wearing a stole, we're available for prayer. So join me now in an opening invocation. So as I take a deep breath in, I recognize and realize that I am one with the One, that there is one divine mind, one divine love, one divine source. And that source is in me, is in you, in everything. And when I quiet my thoughts, I can hear that divine mind and recognize the connection that I have with all life, with you, with everything, and especially within myself. And so I welcome this opportunity. I welcome this moment as we listen to Reverend Deborah's talk and take in the worthiness that it is. And I allow myself to be open, to be available, and to listen with my divine mind. Thankful, grateful, and blessed. And so it is.
This question, while I'm speaking, how is the universe conspiring for the highest good of all life right now? So just let that question marinate in your consciousness while I speak, and we'll get back to it at the end. So each year, the global organization that we're part of, Science of Mind, recommends or invites us to start each year with reviewing four of the basic principles of Science of Mind. And these four basic principles happen to be the first four chapters of the Science of Mind textbook, which is kind of the foundational book written by Ernest Holmes in the 20s and 30s. It is not a book you just sit down and read, but it is a beautiful, beautiful reference book, and it's full of meditations and prayers as well as essays. And really, he wrote it because he couldn't find anything that existed yet that pulled together the wisdom of all of the spiritual traditions of humanity. So this was his contribution to that wisdom literature. So the first four chapters are called, here's what they are: the thing itself, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. So those four topics will be what we're covering in the Sunday services in the month of January. And so I get to talk about everything. So my topic is the thing itself, and we use lots of words for that: divine mind, presence, all that is, the God self, mother, father, God. These are all words for the thing. And I'm going to talk about that first principle in more depth today, and I'm going to be using stories from our indigenous peoples of this continent to explain these principles that are unchanging in life. And that's based on the idea that if a principle is true in one time period, in one culture, with one people, if it is truly a principle, it is true for all people in all timelines, in all cultures. And that's the mystic tradition of spirituality. So we're going to be talking about that and the indigenous forms of that that have come through storytelling. So I'm going to start with a story from the Salish people. Now, the Salish people are indigenous to the Pacific Northwest, but that really is our connotation. So it's the people that lived around the Salish Sea, really from our area up to what we call British Columbia, all the way up to Alaska. So these are the indigenous people. And this story I'm going to say, give you a little series, summary of, is a foundational story for this group of people. And it's a primary teaching about the sacred relationship between humans and the natural world for this people. So it's called The Salmon Boy. So the story begins with a young boy who had a remarkably disrespectful relationship to the salmon that fed his village. And even though he knew better, he would throw the bones into the bushes after he ate instead of returning them to the water. He'd step on the fish when he was fishing. And a turning point, basically the straw that broke the salmon's back, is that he refused a piece of dried salmon, throwing it away because he thought it looked moldy. Well, shortly after these three things, he was swimming in the river and got caught in a very powerful current and sunk to the bottom of the river. But instead of drowning, he was rescued by the salmon people. And the people took him underwater to their home in the ocean. So the boy lived among the salmon for more than a year and discovered that they actually were people who lived in villages and only put on salmon skins to offer themselves as food to humans. And so he learned that if the bones were not returned to the water, the salmon people, when they returned to their home, were missing limbs or crippled. And so that next year, when the salmon returned to the river to spawn, the boy, who was now a salmon himself, is caught in his mother's fishing net. But she recognizes him by a copper necklace he was wearing that he wore as a child. And so after his salmon skin was carefully removed in a ritual, he returns to human form and then shares the secrets of the salmon people with his village. And he taught them to properly honor the salmon so the run would always return. The story ends with the boy spotting an old, worn-out salmon floating downstream, and he recognized it as his own soul. So he speared it and immediately died. His people returned his body to the river, which allowed his spirit to return permanently to the ocean to live as one of the salmon people. So this story teaches that life is all connected, is all interconnected, and moves in a continuous cycle of giving and receiving. And it also teaches that humans have a responsibility to be good stewards to the environment and keep the streams and the beaches clean for the return of the salmon. The third idea in the story is never waste food and remember to show gratitude for the sacrifices being made by other living beings. So the story provides also a basis for a ritual among the people, the first salmon ceremony. And so the first catch of the season is ceremoniously eaten and its bones are returned to the water to ensure that the run will continue each year. And this ceremony is continuing to be done every year. It's done, I know now, even today in the people of the Skagit Valley. So how does this story line up with Science of Mind? Well, this is all about the oneness of life. And here's a quote from Ernest Holmes. "The mind which we discover within us is the mind that governs everything. This is the thing itself. And we should recognize its simplicity." So in this first chapter of his book, Ernest talks about the thing itself, he also calls the creative mind, is the thing within we all express individually. And it's an aspect of the oneness of the divine in which we are all fully supported. So all aspects of life are supported in that divine mind. And if we have a strong focus, a strong intention, the universe will conspire to make it happen through the power of the law, which is just a shorthand way of saying the way life works. So in that quote, it's a reminder that the mind, or the thing itself, supports all of us, not only for our individual wants and desires and the calling of humanity, but it also supports every aspect of creation. So all of life is in that same divine interconnected relationship. And there are synchronicities that can unfold in the lives of people who are in that space of consciousness of knowing the connectedness of all life. Then synchronicity happens and can be observed in the cycle of life among the salmon, the eagles, the trees, and the people. And there's many stories in the Salish people, like the salmon boy and the story of the salmon people, that teach respect, responsibility, and understanding that all parts of the ecosystem are intertwined. So we know, and it's actually taught now in our schools by our natural scientists who are informed by the wisdom of the indigenous people, that this relationship we see in everyday life, where the salmon are fed upon by the eagles, the salmon deposit nutrition into the soils that then provide what the trees need to grow by the river. The trees provide the shade that's needed for the salmon eggs to hatch and to grow into young salmon. It is all an interrelated relationship of connection that Science of Mind would call the divine mind. So each of us in life, each person, is an individual or a unique expression of this divine experience. And as we think thoughts and feel emotions and have intentions, the law of mind responds by reflecting these intentions back to us. And in this way, the universe supports us, conspiring for our good, rearranging the world, and creating synchronicities that make a way for those intentions. So engaging the law of mind is natural. We do it, and we've been doing it our entire life with every thought, with every emotion, with every choice. But if we use it intentionally with thought about what we're feeling, what we want to believe, what we want to experience, the law will work. And it works equally for everyone. So there's no favorites. So the indigenous stories then help us discover ways to deepen and interact with these principles that Science of Mind talks about. Here is a second story, and this story is about the connection of life, but it's in a different way. It's a creation story. And this is a story coming from the people who are native to the Great Lakes area. It's found in the book Braiding Sweet Grass by Robin Wall Kimmer, which happens to be the book of the month for the Science of Mind organization, and we're using it also this month. And we've got a book study going in just a week or so, done by Francine Kitchen, which we'll tell you more about in announcements, so that we can read it together as a community. It's a beautiful book, easy to read and very, very thought-provoking. So in this second story, it's the story of Sky Woman. And it's a foundational story told both by the Iroquois and the Great Lake people. It's a creation story about a woman who falls from the sky world to the watery abyss. The animals help her by creating land. The land becomes called Turtle Island, and it's built on the back of a giant turtle. So using the mud from below, brought up by the animals, allowed her to spread seeds and plants from her bundle, which eventually becomes the earth. And this gives birth to life, teaching humanity both gratitude and reciprocal care of the world. So in the story, Sky Woman is pregnant and falls through a hole in Sky World, which is a place of light and love, and falls into this dark, watery abyss. The geese catch her, breaking her descent, and then other animals come to help. And those animals dive down the water into the soil, bring up little bits of soil to place on the turtle's back, and Sky Woman does her part of scattering the plants and the seeds and the roots from the sky world to create this new world. And she dances on the growing land, spreading it outward until it flourishes into this abundant world that we know about. She gives birth to a daughter, and her actions of gratitude and care for the land establish the model for human nature relationships. And it teaches humans to be caretakers, not just users of the earth. So the author of Braiding Sweetgrass contrasts that with the Adam and Eve story, which is another creation story. In this contrast, she is showing that humans are part of creation, not separate from it, and honoring the land that sustains the people. So unlike the exile of Adam and Eve from Eden, Sky Woman's story shows humans as belonging to the land and becoming indigenous to it by tending to it. So this story is part of the original instructions that guided the people into ethical relationships with the environment, emphasizing thankfulness and giving back. So there is much that we can learn and find in common as we interact with the wisdom stories coming from the indigenous people and other cultures. What this is doing for all of us, it's helping to expand our experience of life. So we're consciously aware of our connection with all of creation, that we are each fully supported by life. And we can be part of the support that moves out from us into the world. And so it is a giving and receiving cycle. And the law will rearrange the manifest world to make a way for your intention, remembering that we are part of the manifesting. So we can choose to partner with the universe to support all who live with us on Turtle Island, from the vulnerable plant life to the health of our water. And it invites ourselves to ask questions like, how do I experience being part of creation? How am I being a point of synchronicity for all life? I have strong personal relationships with the trees of our region, and I love to read about the new discoveries that our scientists are finding on how trees communicate with other trees and how they're in relationship with their environment. For example, the fungus that grows in their roots helps to break down nutrients found in the soil that the tree can't do by itself. And therefore, that fungus is helping the tree to grow and thrive, while the tree is providing place and purpose for the fungus. Just another example of reciprocal relationship. And there's another story in the Braiding Sweetgrass book where we learn about the relationship the pecan tree has with animals around it, that the trees regulate the size of their pecan growth production to support the needs of the animal around them. So when there are fewer animals, they actually produce more pecans. So then there becomes more animals, which supports that cycle of animals growing with each other. And then the animal population goes down again. The pecan population, the nuts, the harvest was smaller as the animals were growing, and it continues. So the pecan production is in relationship with the population size of the animals in that region the trees are in. So scientists are finding out these things, but the native peoples of that region knew it beforehand. And this story tells the people about the relationship between the trees and the animals. So as we reconnect with some of these core tenets of Science of Mind, we're invited to remember the oneness of all people, and indeed all inhabitants of life. Our thoughts, our beliefs, and our actions help us to co-create our experience of the world. And in addition to our own experiences, our choices impact the world and impact all the others that call this world home as well. So when we consciously create with the good of all in mind, we are affirming that we are not separate from all that is life. And that level of consciousness puts into play the synchronicities that begin to reflect those choices back to us. The choices of good, of connection, of interrelationship, of reciprocal giving and receiving. And that's the worldview that both the indigenous peoples taught themselves about their relationship. It's the worldview that our natural scientists are understanding as they describe it in scientific terms of ecological systems. And because I have the privilege of living in the Skagit Valley, I get to watch it played out in just everyday things where I see state and local government working with university students, funded by the tribes of the Skagit, supported by the volunteers of citizens. And these groups of people have come together to plant the trees that are needed by the sides of the rivers. Senior citizens become volunteers in classrooms as they teach children these stories, and the children are raising the salmon to become large enough to be released into the rivers. And the whole classroom goes down as a group for a ritual of returning the salmon fry to the rivers so that they can continue the runs forever. So it is a continuing ceremony, a continuing connection that we are teaching each other, maybe using different words, maybe using different stories, but the principles remain the same for all times, all peoples, all cultures. So what can you do? You might just take some time this week to reflect on your connection with the natural world. How do you experience oneness with all of life? How do you expand your awareness of diversity of creation? Are there some small actions you can take? I put out a bird feeder this winter. Now, I haven't yet done this, but I want to get more understanding of the preferred food of the native birds, so I'm putting that out. Another suggestion for those of you who may not do this now, when you find insects in your home or in your office, treat them kindly and safely as you return them to wherever their natural spot is in life. And in the spring, plant native plants so that the butterflies and the bees of our world thrive as they have something to feed on. So finally, I'll share a couple of quotes again, one from Science of Mind, one from Traditional Thought. Ernest Hobbes says, "Nature has awaited our discovery of its laws. And as we discover new laws of nature, we can use them. We must come to understand nature's laws. Then it works with us." And from the native traditions, "In native ways of knowing, human people are often referred to as the younger brothers of creation. We say that humans have the least experience in how to live and thus the most to learn. So we must look for our teachers coming from other species for guidance. Their wisdom is apparent in the way they live." So in summary, my theme today was the first principle that life, the thing itself, is a experience of connection, experience of unity, an experience that we are all in this together with all of life. And traditional wisdom stories help us to understand that truth, maybe by looking at it with just a little different frame of reference. And synchronicities in life can happen when we're in that consciousness of connection, that connection of unity. When we're consciously aware of our relationship with the rest of life, so that we create our experiences for good, for ourselves, but also for all of life. We are all one. So it is. So we'll just do a quick prayer this morning. Let's just breathe in and release. And so as we lean into this knowing of that we are an aspect of one life. We have a foot in this world of connection and unity and reciprocal relationship, as well as being a beautiful individualized aspect of that one life. And so our life reflects both of these things, that we are a aspect of everything, that we are all in relationship with each other. All of us that call this world home are in relationship with each other. And so our individual choices for good are interacting with this consciousness of being connected to all else that is. And so the good that we receive is impacting and moving through us, manifesting into the physical world as increasing good. And in this, we are all lifted. And so we each this day walk in a new embrace, a new invitation to the experience of being connected with all that is, with life itself, through us, as us, in us. And with this, I am so deeply, deeply grateful. And I renew my knowing of this simply by saying with you, and so it is.